Welcome to episode 136 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, author of What, When, Why? Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine. And I'm here with my co-host, Jen Stevens, author of Delay, Don't Deny, Living an Intermittent Fasting Lifestyle. For more on us, check out ifpodcast.com, melanieavalon.com, and jenstevens.com. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this podcast do not constitute medical advice or treatment. So, pour yourself a cup of black coffee, a mug of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Hi friends, I'm about to tell you how to get 10% off the perfect coffee for fasting. You guys know I am extremely picky about what I consume during my fast, and we talk all the time on this show about the benefits of coffee while fasting. However, there are a lot of factors in coffee which not only determine how much it benefits your health and your fast, but also which can potentially harm your health and your fast. What you want is organic, clean, mold-free, high antioxidant coffee. That's exactly why I created Glow Coffee. It is an organic, clean, premium, single-origin Arabica coffee from sustainable women-led farms in Colombia. And this coffee is so clean. It's grown organically, of course, but then we go even farther than that. We third-party test the beans for almost 100 toxic compounds, including pesticides, heavy metals, and mold. And what makes Glow especially exciting from a fasting perspective is that we sourced it specifically to be high in chlorogenic acid, or CGA. That is coffee's primary powerful antioxidant that has been studied for its role in metabolism and blood sugar regulation, among many other things. The elevation and growing conditions of the coffee bean affect the levels of CGA in the coffee, and how you roast it also affects that. So we meticulously addressed all of these factors to create one of the highest antioxidant coffees possible. So instead of just drinking coffee during your fast, you are actually getting something that may support the metabolic benefits of fasting. And on top of all of that, Glow is absolutely delicious. It's smooth, balanced, low bitterness, and especially perfect to drink black during your fast. Glow Coffee is truly the coffee I have always wanted for my fasting routine, and I'm so excited to share it with you guys. You can get 10% off with the coupon code IFPODCAST at glowcoffeeco.com. That's right, go to glowcoffeeco.com and use the coupon code IFPODCAST to get 10% off your order. So are you guys ready to glow inside and out? Fuel your day, illuminate your way. Go get Glow Coffee now. Hi friends, we talk all the time on this show about the importance of supporting your muscles with adequate protein and resistance training. What if I told you there was a supplement that could actually support muscle strength just by taking it with no change in your lifestyle? I know that sounds too good to be true, but it's true. In a clinical study, participants taking Timeline's MitoPure experienced a 12% improvement in muscle strength in just 4 months with no change in exercise. And that is just one of the benefits. Personally, what I love the most about MitoPure is how it helps my energy. I have noticed a huge difference in my day-to-day vitality and fatigue levels ever since I started regularly taking MitoPure. It has become a non-negotiable for me. How can it make all these changes with no change in lifestyle? MitoPure is powered by urolithin A. That is a postbiotic compound that supports your body's natural process of mitophagy. So you guys have heard us talk all the time about autophagy, which is your body's process of clearing out old, dysfunctional components and recycling them. Mitophagy is similar, but it specifically targets damaged mitochondria. And this really matters because your mitochondria are your cell's energy powerhouses. They create the energy your body needs to function. Ergo, when you support your mitochondrial health, you are supporting your energy, your muscle function, and healthy aging at the cellular level. Timeline spent more than 15 years researching mitochondrial health, invested over $50 million in research, and conducted multiple human clinical trials to unlock the power of urolithin A. The result is MitoPure. Because it supports the mitochondria, that's also why those participants magically gained 12% in muscle strength with no additional exercise. And I am so excited because Timeline's MitoPure is now available at a new lower price at our special link. With our link, you can get it for $79, which is absolutely amazing. Just go to timeline.com/ifpodcast. If you sign up for a subscription, which you can pause or cancel at any time, you can get it for $59. Think about that, $59. And in 12 months, you could have 12% more muscle strength with no additional exercise. I take MitoPure every single day, and I truly cannot imagine my life without it. Go to timeline.com/ifpodcast to get MitoPure starting at $79 with our special link. Welcome back to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. So today's episode is actually part two of a fascinating conversation that Jen and I had with Matt Gallant and Wade Lightheart from the company Bioptimizers. We initially intended for it to be one episode, but the conversation was just so fascinating, so intense, so scientific. We talked about so many things that we just had to split it up into two episodes so we could keep talking long enough. So definitely listen to last week's episode, part one first, and then this episode, because we do reference some of the things that we discussed in that episode.
Yeah. So I started fasting about 20 years ago as a practice, kind of before it was cool. It just made sense to me. And I started to get the benefits. And one of the things that I did is I started doing extended fasts up to 10 days just on water. And I would track my results relative, like a 3 or 5 or 10 day fast without enzymes. And then I started to add what I call super physiological dosages of enzymes. So for those people who want to be on the bleeding edge or really want to experiment with this, you'll love this. So I started taking dosages of, 100 enzymes a time. I actually peaked at 1,000 in a day, which is a little excessive, but I was taking 100 masszymes a day. And I was able to elicit recovery, or some people would call it a crisis. So I can remember one fasting, I was doing high levels and it felt this strange pain in my liver for a few days. I tried to get it out through a variety of methods. And then I kept pounding the masszymes. And then I drank a liter of salt water brine to go with it, which if you haven't done that, that's pretty hardcore. But I ejected this bright yellow toxic material that came right out of my liver. And the pain that I was in excruciating pain in my liver for 4 days, I did that process and I went into a state of euphoria. And later on, when we looked at, liver counts and stuff like this, I made a remarkable transformation in my liver health. And it was directly correlated with high dosages, what I would call therapeutic levels or super physiological levels of using enzymes. And so enzymes are a catalyst for every function in your body, everything from thinking to blinking. And there's a guy by the name of Dr. Edward Howell who demonstrated that the longevity of any biological organisms is inversely related to the amount of enzymes they have present, because that's essentially what does all of the chemical reactions, all of the metabolic results, and they're catalysts that speed up these functions. And so I thought of, well, if you're 70 or 80% of your enzymatic production in humans is devoted to actually digesting, absorbing, and utilizing your food. One of the benefits when you fast is that you stop that process. So you free up your natural body's capacity to produce enzymes to whatever level it is. Now, Howell made some caveats. He said the average 40-year-old has less than 30% of the enzymes pool they have as a kid. That's why little kids recover very quickly. They heal from injuries or wounds or things, as opposed to senior citizens. So I ascertained if I took massive quantities of enzymes, like I had seen in these outrageous cancer protocols that people were making recoveries from stage 4 cancers, et cetera. I'm not making any claims, but the research is well documented with Gonzalez's. They had over 12,000 patients doing this. I said, well, maybe the mechanism is that they're adding all these other metabolic workers, if you will, to start healing the body. And sure enough, as I started to experiment it, and then, I supervised, literally hundreds of clients through my work with the American Anti-Cancer Institute and people that came to my clinic and stuff, we started to see accelerated results in virtually every category by taking high dosages of enzymes. And that's, for a lot of people, they would find that controversy. But the reality is as human organisms or as any animal species is used to consuming an enzymatically rich diet, because they eat, whether you're bears or tigers or, horses, you're eating food in a live enzymatically rich state. And as we live in the modern era where we've monocultured food production and, industrialized food distribution, we solved the caloric issues that plagued humanity, starvation and nutrient deficiency being a big factor in longevity and health. We studied those programs, but now we're suffering from overconsumption of food and an under-nutrification, and we're completely devoid of enzymes. And how are predicted all these genetic illnesses that we're now suffering from, the inability to procreate, strange sociological behavior? He predicted this 60 years ago that would happen because of the industrialization of food production. So we're there. We believe that redefining what food is, and food is primarily been allocated to, you know, fats, carbohydrates, proteins, and a few little minerals thrown in there. But what's left out of it is the key elements of enzymes and the key elements of bacteria, healthy bacteria, which would be naturally present in the dietary practices of our ancestors. Those have all been stripped out of it. So without adding those things into your diet, it's almost impossible, if not impossible, to get to an optimal state or to get to what I call a super physiological state. Because we're into not just getting better. We're not just getting okay. We're looking at pushing the envelope of, well, how much can we develop? What things can we access? And enzymes, in my opinion, is probably the least looked at topic and the one that has the most benefits. And it's starting to open the door, but we've been on this trend for 20 years, and it's why Bioptimizers is leading the way in this development.
No, I could not agree more. My obsession with enzymes is slightly insane. And it's funny, you were just saying that it's not, you know, it's not really pursued in any great extent. And I found it really interesting. I've been reading so many books recently about longevity and autophagy and fasting and all these things. And I find that a lot of them do mention enzymes, but it's often like in passing. It's never really dedicated, you know, a large amount to it. And I think it's just so huge. And then on the flip side, I'm actually reading a book right now. It's an older book, but it's called The Enzyme Factor. I don't know if you guys have read it. It's by Dr. Hiromi Shinya.
Yeah, Hiromi Shinya. I'm a big student of Hiromi Shinya and a fascinating researcher, well-known guy, of course, who invented the little camera that goes up and checks out what's under the hood. Phenomenal book.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I'm loving the book so much. The only way I wish it could be even more fruitful would be if it had more science. It's more just based on like his own research and what he's found. But for listeners, so he's a GI doc, and he, like you said, Wade, he developed novel methods in colonoscopies for removing polyps. And so he came up with the camera thing as well.
Yeah, well, he's an interesting guy. He's a kung fu master who happened to be ambidextrous that could actually do these results quickly. And then he developed the Shinya tech for removing polyps they go up with the camera and remove that with his technique, which is extraordinary. And I think what his big claim to fame was, and this is what difference from maybe scientific research, is he's in clinical practice. So he scoped over 400,000 colons. That's a mind numbing number. And he also wasn't limited by, say, a North American paradigm, because he was in Japan, which are the leading kind of enzyme culture in the world, as part of his year. And then the other half, he was at the Beth Israel Center in New York. So here's a guy that did the who's who of virtually every culture, the heads of state, kings, queens, you name it, were going to see this guy. And he wouldn't even treat them unless he put them on enzymes, probiotics, and got them on alkaline water to clean their systems out. He's like, no, I'm not even treating you. That's how strong he was. And his success rate was unparalleled.
Yeah, no, the book is fascinating. And like you just said, Wade, true, he doesn't have the clinical research or the science, but he's like seen it, and he's seen what works and what doesn't work. And yeah, his takeaway from the book, which it's a really easy read, it's an inspirational read, but it's fascinating. And his takeaway is that he really has seen that these enzyme-rich diets are what seem to massively benefit our GI tract. And when we're lacking in these enzymes from raw foods, eating too many cooked foods, different, you know, dietary approaches, that it just creates inflammation and havoc in our GI tract. His whole theory is that there's like this source enzyme in our body, and that we only have a limited amount of enzymes. And when they are directed towards one need, then we don't have enough for, you know, other areas of our body. But I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's fascinating. But yep, enzymes, enzymes are huge. And then Wade, I know we talked about this before, but Matt, you wouldn't know this. So when Jen and I first started this podcast we figured it out. Was it a year and a half ago?
It was April of 2017. So
okay. Yeah. So when we first started this podcast and we didn't like know each other or anything, one of our first bonding moments was we realized that we both had one supplement that we took and saw massive health benefits from, and that was serrapeptase. Ever since then, we've kind of created like a serrapeptase storm. Now it's like everybody wants serrapeptase who listens to our podcast, but we've definitely seen, you know, the benefits that can be achieved with enzymes, both in the fasted state, like you were discussing, to boost that autophagy, clearing out your system, and then also enzyme, you know, digestive enzymes with food, like you guys make with Masszymes.
Serrapeptase is it's a proteolytic enzyme. And when you take proteolytic enzymes on an empty stomach, they have positive systemic effects. You know, and Wade and I have a very similar story. We were blessed to learn about enzymes from Dr. Michael O'Brien. And we were like, hey, let's try it out. Let's try it out for 3-4 months. Let's try a high dose enzyme cycle. And that's what we did. And we both experienced some of the most powerful effects we've ever experienced, both from, you know, an energy perspective, bowel movements, skin tone, exercise, recovery, fat loss, like everything just up leveled. And that's when we decided, you know what, like we need to make a better version of this. And that's how Masszymes was born. So Masszymes has been around for like 15 years.
I think one thing to add too to that is just cognitive function. So many people struggling with an inability to focus or stay thing. Enzymes for improving cognitive focus, I think, is unparalleled.
Yeah. And that's where also CAPEX comes in. I mean, if you need a lot of mental focus, I think CAPEX is incredible. But the point is that, yeah, Wade and I both bonded on enzymes as well. So
look at us. We're like the enzyme family here. I love it. Oh, I cannot agree more about the mental focus and the brain fog. If you've never experienced brain fog, listeners, you're very lucky, but once you do experience it, you definitely know what it is. It's almost incredible, at least for me, taking enzymes, especially in the fasted state, just clears my head like none other. It's very, very incredible.
I think most people are in brain fog, but it's normalized. You know, where Wade and I are from, the way they judge a good restaurant is if there's so much food on the plate, they can't finish it, right? Which I know sounds weird, but it's true. And, you know, most people, and it includes my family, and I love them, but, you know, let's just be honest about the situation, which is they consider being full bloated and a heavy stomach a normal thing, right? Like, I mean, I know because I was raised that way.
Sign of a good meal. That's if you don't feel that, it's something's wrong.
Right. And, you know, to me, those are all the signs that either you're eating the wrong thing or you're not producing enough enzymes or you don't have enough stomach acid. Like, you know, feeling heavy, feeling bloated, gas, diarrhea, constipation. These are all warning signals that say, hey, let me either add enzymes, add stomach acid, or change what I'm eating, or all of the above. So your brain always wants to normalize reality, whatever that is. And like I said, I think most people are just living in a state of brain fog and they just think it's normal.
I am a huge fan of getting our nutrition from our food and support following the most nutritious diet possible. That said, did you know it can be really hard to get enough magnesium in your diet? And most people are magnesium deficient. That's because, like I said, we should be getting our nutrients from food, but our soils today are magnesium depleted, up to 90% depleted from what they used to be. That means you possibly simply can't get enough magnesium from your diet. And magnesium is involved in over 600 enzymatic processes in the body. Basically, everything that you do requires magnesium. Replenishing your magnesium levels with the Ultimate Magnesium Supplement can help so many things. It will help your energy and activity, your muscle recovery, your soreness, your digestion, your bowel movements, your stress, your relaxation, so many things. And it was important to me to take the very best magnesium on the market. That's why I made Avalon X Magnesium 8. It has 8 forms of magnesium to make sure that your body gets the magnesium that it needs with no problematic fillers or ingredients. That means no sneaky hidden fillers like rice and seed oils that are in a lot of supplements. It also comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. This is the magnesium you want, and it will change your life. I made all my Avalon X supplements to be the very best on the market, with the highest quality ingredients, tested multiple times for purity and potency, as well as for heavy metals and mold. You can get 10% off my Avalon X Magnesium 8 at avalonx.us with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. That's avalonx.us with the coupon code MelanieAvalon for 10% off Avalon X Magnesium 8. You'll also see there my magnesium nightcap. That's a special type of magnesium that specifically crosses the blood-brain barrier. So if you'd like to really up your magnesium game and support your memory, mood, rest, and relaxation, you've got to get my Avalon X magnesium nightcap featuring magnesium 3 and 8. So again, you can get 10% off site-wide at avalonx.us for all my supplements, including serapeptase, berberine, spirulina, and those magnesiums with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. To get all the latest specials, discounts, and announcements from me, get on my email list. That's at avalonx.us/email list. And you can get text updates when you text AvalonX to 877-861-8318. That's AvalonX to 877-861-8318.
You know, we hear this with intermittent fasting all the time. You know, I run several large Facebook support groups. We have over 250,000 members in these support groups. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. But new fasters, as they start to adjust, they'll get to the point. And we hear over and over again, help, when I open my window and eat, I feel bloated and gassy and they feel bad. And I think that what you were just saying is true, that maybe before that was normalized. And now that they're doing intermittent fasting, they feel great during the fast. And then here's this feeling that's popping up that now suddenly they don't feel well. And it's a sign that there's something going on in their gut and they don't know how to fix it. They don't know what to do. But it's striking, you know, before when we were eating all day long, we just always were in that brain fog feeling blah. We didn't even know we felt bad. And then you start to feel so much better during the fast that it like becomes striking. So what would you say? Because we hear that, like I said, all the time. Help, I eat and then I feel gassy and bloated. What do they do?
Yeah. So going back to kind of the seven keys, you know, now we're talking about biofeedback, which is just a fancy word that means your body's telling you stuff, right? It's sending you signals. You just got to listen. So, you know, in terms of troubleshooting that, it's either, you know, again, stomach acid, and I won't wait to walk through the five stages of digestion in a second, but it's either usually stomach acid, not enough of it, or not enough enzymes, or it can be bad bacteria, not enough bile. Now, again, Bioptimizers, we got the tools to fix all of this stuff. And, you know, one of the things, you know, going back to the whole transhumanism perspective, you know, we are all wired like physiologically to be born, to peak in our late 20s, early 30s, and then to decline and die. You know, but as transhumanists, as biohackers, we have the tools to extend that peak, to extend that prime, to elongate our health span. You know, who knows if we can live longer? I certainly believe we can and we will. But
well, I'm 50 and I don't feel like I'm declining. So
yeah, exactly. That's the power of this stuff, right? That's the power of this stuff. But the point is that it is normal that around our mid-30s that our stomach acid starts declining, that our enzyme production starts declining. And that's where using these tools like CAPEX, like Masszymes, like HCL Breakthrough are very powerful. But Wade, why don't you walk through the five stages of digestion? Because I think that framework can help people troubleshoot their problems.
Yeah, I think it's really important that people understand that. So the first stage is basically to taste, touch, sense the food. That actually preps. Your body starts getting signals, you know, the salivary response, you know, the sense of an increase in hunger by being exposed to the food that support your health. That's the first stage. And then, you know, the food enters into your mouth. Now, this is a critical factor that people haven't taken into consideration. And that is, it's a single canal from your mouth to your anus. In other words, just because you eat something doesn't mean it's inside the cells or inside your body. Technically, it's not. It's not actually inside your body. And the only way that it's going to get inside your body, either as energy units or as building blocks for your body, is if you can digest, absorb, assimilate, and utilize the food that you're using, and you can properly eliminate the waste. And so we now live in a world that's very sedentary. We don't move around as much, which has impacts on pelvic floors and our natural cycle of contractions inside the body, peristaltic contractions, things like that. Also, how frequently we eat a lot more frequently than before. So we're kind of returning back to when we had less food around, because I think there's part of it that's beneficial to us. So that stage, then what happens to the food is you chew it, and ideally you're masticating it properly, chewing it up really well. That preempts it. There's some salivary enzymes that'll break down carbohydrates and things like that. Then the food goes down the esophagus into the upper cardiac portion of the stomach. Now, a lot of people have this kind of vision that there's this like bowl of hydrochloric acid sitting there in your guts ready to burn up everything. That's not the case. Hydrochloric acid is released by the body 30 to 60 minutes after your food. And it's designed to do that for two specific reasons. Reason number one, it's to disinfect the body from parasites, bacteria, other pathogens that could disrupt your microbiome or your health or whatever. And that's one stage. The second thing that hydrochloric acid does is it changes the pH of the food mixture that you have. And what we do know is we're naturally supposed to consume enzymatically rich foods. And if anything that's been cooked over 114 degrees has no enzymes. And so our body has to manufacture enzymes. And what happens is that first 30 to 60 minutes when key amino acids should have been breaking down by your body, they don't get broken down. And even when your body releases enzyme, what you have is incompletely digested proteins, undigested proteins. And any food that you consume that isn't utilized by the body now becomes a potential toxin, because it's going to feed the bad bacteria in your microbiome. We'll get to that in a minute. So this critical stage, and one of the key elements, interesting enough, for having high hydrochloric acid is hydration. You need actually water to make hydrochloric acid, which seems kind of ironic, but most people are in a chronic dehydrated state. The average 40-year-old is producing less than 30% of the hydrochloric acid that they're normally doing. And what's happening, they get symptoms of heartburn or acid reflux. And what does the doctor do? It gives them a proton pump to prevent the acid. But what's happening is that acid is actually, when you hit a certain level, what happens is you have this esophageal sphincter that closes just at the top of your stomach. And if you don't produce enough hydrochloric acid, that flat stays open, and some of the acid inside the system will splash up into your esophagus and start creating damage. And, you know, left unchecked, that's where you get heartburn, and that's where you get acid reflux. But left unchecked, that leads to very things like throat cancers, which is on a radical rise because of undigested food. Once that's happening properly, you're producing enough hydrochloric acid, you've masticated the food, you have enzymes present in the food. After that's done, after a couple hours or whatever, what happens is that food chyme is going to exit out of the stomach, and your body adds what's called bicarbonate buffers. And these are fancy name for minerals that will balance out the pH so that you don't burn holes in your intestinal tract. That's where people get duodenal ulcers and things like that. So as that food chyme travels into the intestinal tract, this is where your microbiome, the good, the bad, and the ugly bacteria are going to get to work. And if you have people talking about, you know, balances in their microbiome and stuff, basically it's about 10% good guys, 10% bad guys, and 80% opportunists. And the thing is you want to get as many good guys in there and you want to get as many bad guys out of there, so that you can assimilate the foods. There's a symbiotic relationship between the bacteria in our cells. In fact, without these bacteria, we'd all be dead. 95% of your neurotransmitters in your brain are produced by these bacteria, which are metabolizing the food that you're eating and converting them into the polypeptide chains that make people feel good. It's also a key component in, you know, breaking down carbohydrates, fats, proteins, and allowing key elements to get across the gut biome. Now, we've added all these other agents and other chemicals and additives which disrupt that. We've had a highly antibiotic culture that's been propagated for many, many years. And so what happens is that so many people have a compromised microbiome. And so even if they're getting all the rest of it done, they're out of balance, they're not digesting their food well, they feel upset, they get sick all the time. And then what that happens to do is it disrupts your natural elimination cycle. That's the final stage, is to eliminate the waste after you've assimilized the nutrients and the energy units that you require in order to exist. And so what a lot of people benefit, say, from an intermittent fasting program or restricted eating or ketogenic diet, is what they're doing is they're limiting the inflammatory agents inside the body. And they're creating a space where your body's natural healing cycles will be able to repair the intestinal lining, that will help restore your body back. But in a lot of cases, it's not enough and they need to optimize that. And that's why augmenting your diet for at least 90 days with high dosages of enzyme, hydrochloric acid, and microbiome are good probiotics tends to reset the gut and get your body back to an optimal state so that you get more out of your ketogenic diet, more out of your intermittent fasting, or if you're on a plant-based diet like myself, you just become optimized to assimilate and utilize that. And that's what we're all about. It's why we educate people and you know, the results speak for themselves. There's a reason we've been around for 15 years and are growing at leaps and bounds now, because 12% of the emergency hospital visits today are gastrointestinal issues. I mean, they're going in an ambulance. They're having interactive surgeries. 25% of the population is on antidepressants. A third of the population is suffering from some sort of digestive issue. And again, that's because of food production and food distribution cycles. And so we have to take intervention. I like all the technology that's available to us. I love the advantage of massive food supply and all these things, but that can also be a toxin. And taking care of our digestive health paves the way to success in every other area of our life.
Wow. That's very informative. Very helpful. I didn't realize that that was such a high percentage of hospitalizations.
I think it is a unobserved or untalked about issue, because if you also look at the other big three, you look at cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. Well, guess what? Those are all correlated to lifestyle choices and dietary choices. And so if you actually look at how much, I would say that at least 80%, maybe close to 90% of the degenerative conditions and illnesses that we are experiencing as a population can be avoided by improving your digestive health, period. And intermittent fasting is an option, ketogenic diets, plant-based, all those, whatever method gets you there. But at the foundational component is you've got to be able to utilize the food that you're eating, and it's got to be in a way that allows you, that doesn't compromise your organ functioning.
Well, you know, we've only known this since Hippocrates, right? You know, let food be thy medicine. How have we forgotten it?
Yeah. He also said all disease begins in the gut.
Right. I mean, when did he live? You know, what's old is new again, and also fasting.
Yeah. You know, so it used to be forced fasting, and now we're doing it because it you know, our bodies, keep in mind, like, we're talking about billions of years of evolution to get to the human side of it. And I think so much of our population is focused on technological advancements or social conditioning experiments, as all the ones that are going on in the various countries. But the reality is good luck trying to trump billions of years of evolutionary biology. And the people that are kind of getting away from that are getting into these kind of echo chambers and social media about, you know, just reconfirming their biases. You know, this has no place in real science and real health technology. And I think we're, you know, I really appreciate being on here for you guys providing insight for people who are doing their own clinical experiences on themselves.
Right. N equals one.
To go back to your question of how to troubleshoot, you know, in our opinion, in our experience, in our clients' experience, like, the perfect digestion combo for any meal, or for most meals, is, you know, enzymes, a probiotic like P3OM, and then hydrochloric acid. You can digest anything. Now, the right blend of enzymes for different meals, of course, will optimize that even more. CAPEX for people on keto or high-fat meals or paleo. You know, we got Masszymes, which works great for vegetarians, works great as well for paleo. There's more different types of enzymes. We have P3OM, which is a patented probiotic, which is also proteolytic. So it will help break down the proteins and help get more amino acids from the protein, which is what matters. And then we have another product called HCL Breakthrough, which is basically a hydrochloric acid, which is stomach acid. So those, you know, that combination of those, you can digest literally anything, have no bloating, no gas, feel awesome, have more energy, and just get more nutrients out of your food. And by the way, when you are on vacation or cheat meals or cheat days, then Gluten Guardian is your best friend. So we do have that product, which is awesome for when you want to go enjoy breads and pastas and pastries and pizzas, which I do again once a week. So
let me ask you one more thing about that. So you mentioned the P3OM, the HCL Breakthrough, and the Masszymes as being something really anyone could use to help them diet. So what would be the timing? How would you, like, let's say you're somebody like me, I have a snack to open my window. Then later I have a meal because I'm intermittent fasting, you know, before the snack, and then have my meal and then start the fast again. How would you time those, the P3OM, the HCL breakthrough, the Masszymes?
I just take them with the meals. Now, what I will change, though, is how much. So I'd say, like, for every 1,000 calories of food, which if you're just eating one meal a day, you're probably at that or above that. You're probably about 5 capsules of Masszymes will do the trick, and then 2-3 capsules of P3OM, and, you know, 2 or 3 capsules of HCL. If it's a high-fat meal and you want to use CAPEX, it's really strong. So like 1 or 2 caps does the trick on the enzyme side. So that's pretty much what I do. Wait, any further comments to that?
Yeah. So I always, you know, and everybody kind of determines by the meal size that they have. So I would say 3 being an ordinary meal, 5 being a heavier meal, and 1 would be like a snack kind of thing. I always take the enzymes before I eat, hydrochloric acid after, and then I take the P3M before bed because it goes through the whole system. It's a very unique probiotic that I think works really well on an empty stomach, particularly before you go to bed.
Gotcha. Now, I take magnesium at bedtime also. Would the P3OM be fine to take along with the magnesium?
Oh, yeah. 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 We're big magnesium proponents. Well, that's a whole other topic, us getting into magnesium.
So circling back a little bit to the beginning of the conversation with the keto, we did have just a few quick last questions or topics we wanted to clarify for listeners, if you guys are open to it. For the ketogenic diet, do you think it is potentially beneficial for everyone? Are there some people that it's just probably never going to work for? Do you think genetics come into play? Because we get from listeners, a lot of people seem to really thrive on it, but then some people say that it really worked and then it stopped working. And then some say they can just never make it work. So what do you think is going on there? Do you think everybody could potentially give it a go, see if it works for them? And if so, how long should they give it? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So first of all, there's certainly genetic factors, which I can fly through that will, I would say, dictate if people are going to thrive on it or do okay on it or struggle on it. And again, going back to Caucasian, you know, let's just say European genetics, a lot of that, because again, you know, we had to adapt to long winters, short summers. So there's just an epigenetic adaptation that's happened for a long time. And epigenetics get passed on generation to generation, just like genetics do. So we know that for sure, again, what your grandfather ate, what your grand-grandfather ate, et cetera, grandmother, has affected who you are, who we are today. But in terms of certain genes, again, we talked about the CPT1A, the Arctic mutation. You know, some people, there's the FADS1 gene, which has been found in vegetarian farmers that help them biosynthesize omega-3s and omega-6 long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids. In other words, they can kind of use plant-based fatty acids to do what they need inside the body. There's PEMT activity, especially in women, which can affect their choline levels. You know, there's vegetarian genetics such as AMY1, which is kind of going back to what Wade was saying. It produces more amylase in the saliva. There's lactase genetics, which of course, you know, people that are lactose intolerant have issues with. Then there's even fasting genetics. So for an example, people that have, they call it the coastal adaptation gene, the PPAR alpha gene, you know, the certain variants, they actually get stressed out fasting because, again, from a evolutionary standpoint, you know, they have the Mediterranean genes and there was like an abundance of food all the time. So they never really had to adapt to not having food, which is kind of interesting. And a good friend of mine here in Panama, he's actually a keto coach. He gets that response and he has Mediterranean genetics. So when he fasts, like his heart rate variability drops, his heart rate goes up, like, and I get the opposite response. For me, my body really likes that. There's saturated fat intake genetics like ADRB2, APOA2, which is the eat fat, get fat gene, the satiation gene. So that, you know, directly relates to appetite. There's the hangry gene, which is the FTO3. Anyways, there's the APOXC3, which helps regulate blood triglycerides as well as LDL. So there's a lot of genes that, you know, could keep going on and on. including, you know, if you're exhausted on keto, maybe you have the ACAT variant, which could be an issue. Yeah. So the point is that there's definitely a lot of nutrigenomics at play that will make people eat or thrive. But let me jump to, can you hack that? And I think you can. That's where CAPEX and other things can come in. But let's also talk about how clean is your keto? Like I'm happy that the term dirty keto got created. I don't know who came up with it, but it is accurate. And in my experience in this, I was reading carnivore before carnivore became a thing. And that was an intuitive thing where, okay, if I really want to maximize my fat loss results, if I really want to maximize my energy, I would just go right to pure carnivore. And I still do that. And I still notice the benefits. Because I think, again, if you're eating processed foods, there's a lot of course, keto processed foods. And if you use them as treats once in a while or a cheat meal once in a while, it's okay. But if you're constantly making fat bombs and all of these things, I think it's, can create inflammation, either because you're using things like coconut oil, which again, I obviously have some genetic issues with coconut oil, even dairy. So in my opinion, a lot of people, if they want to take their keto results to the next level, eliminate A1 protein. So that means like pretty much all cow-based dairy products should be eliminated. Why? Because they're extremely inflammatory. A2 protein doesn't create the same problem. So you can have, goat cheese and sheep cheese and bison cheese. And, those are A2 proteins. But I've noticed, and it's something I noticed way back in the day, like even like 20 years ago as a trainer, if I would pull out dairy, if people hit a fat loss plateau, just pulling out the dairy would kind of unlock their next fat loss wave. And I didn't understand it at the time, because on a calorie level, it didn't make sense. They were just putting a little bit of maybe cream in their coffee, stuff like that. But now we know that it's the inflammatory response. And if your body's inflamed, you're not going to be burning fat very effectively. And especially if your liver is backed up, which is another way that CAPEX helps, because we have had some really pretty impressive reports of people being stuck and then using CAPEX and unlocking the next wave of fat loss. And I think it directly correlates to a backed up liver. They call it a fatty liver. So anyways, I think if you really clean up your diet and if you have to go to carnivore level, and if that doesn't work, then yeah, you certainly don't have the genetics to do it. Or again, do a 23andMe, download the raw data file, upload it to Prometheace, and then look for these mutations or hire someone who's a nutrigenomic expert to walk you through them. Those are what I would recommend that people do that are struggling with keto or just not getting the same results. And again, you might not have the enzymes, the hydrochloric acid to properly break down the food and either break down the fats, the fatty acids, or the protein into amino acids. And that's where, CAPEX, MassLimes, all these things come in.
Hi, friends. I get asked all the time, what is my ultimate favorite product in my home for supporting my health and wellness? And it's really hard to choose because there are so many incredible things. And that said, if I had to pick just one, it just might be my Sunlighten Infrared Sauna. And I'm about to tell you how you can get a major discount. We're talking up to $1,600 off. I truly cannot imagine my life without my infrared sauna. When I travel, for example, it's probably the thing I miss the most. Unlike traditional saunas, infrared saunas actually heat your body from the inside out using therapeutic infrared wavelengths. So yes, you do get warm and hot, but it feels amazing. I literally look forward to my sauna session every single night. Sometimes I even take what I like to call sauna naps, which is multitasking at its finest. Sauna sessions have been shown in the clinical literature to support cardiovascular health and longevity. You basically can get the effects of a light cardio workout while just lying there. They also support detoxification, including the excretion of heavy metals. They activate heat shock proteins, which is key for longevity and cellular repair. And they help create a gentle artificial fever to support the immune system and ward off infection. And if you are doing intermittent fasting, you really need a sauna. Fasting already trains your body to switch between fuel sources so that you're more metabolically flexible over time. Infrared light interacts directly with your mitochondria to support ATP production, circulation, and nutrient delivery. Fasting can become problematic if it releases too much cortisol. Infrared sauna sessions help regulate your stress hormones, help your body shift into a parasympathetic rest and restore state, and help you recover so that fasting continues to feel sustainable and not draining. Of course, you want the best infrared sauna on the market, and that is Sunlight Den. They have over 25 years in the industry with incredible units built with safety in mind, including no off-gassing materials and ultra-low EMF. Their Impulse Smart Sauna, for example, uses patented technology to deliver specific wavelengths, including near, mid, and infrared, plus red light therapy, with programs you can customize based on your goals. They also have the Solo Unit, which I have, and it is perfect if you're in an apartment or a smaller space. It's a hard shell dome that you actually lie down inside of with your head outside of it. So for example, when I do it, I can literally work, read, and do all the things while I'm in it. It is honestly one of the best investments I've ever made in my health. I'm just having so much gratitude thinking about how I bought this sauna and how much it changes my life. And Sunlight Den has an incredible offer for our audience. Now you can get up to $1,600 off plus free shipping when you use the coupon code IFPODCAST at get.sunlighten.com/IFPODCAST. That's right, up to $1,600 off plus free shipping when you go to get.sunlighten.com/IFPODCAST and use the code IFPODCAST. If you've been thinking about getting an infrared sauna, this is your sign.
I just really enjoy hearing all of that because we're so used to hearing that, you know, if you don't do well on keto, you just didn't keto hard enough. And to hear from someone who fully embraces keto, lives the lifestyle, understands the science of it, that guess what? There are actual reasons in your genes why it may not be the right thing for you is just, I've been saying that to people, you know, in the Facebook support groups, people come in and they're like, keto for all. And you're like, no, we don't think so. And then they're like, you must be really stupid. And to hear it explained scientifically the way that you just did, Matt, is so exciting to hear because it's what my research has shown me. My second book, Feast Without Fear, really goes into why we're all different when it comes to what foods work well for us. And, you know, you start to learn about the gut microbiome, your genetics, and really we can say, okay, a vegetarian and a keto guy can start a company together and everybody's eating what works for them.
Yeah. In my like just observation, again, I got no massive study to back this up, but I'd say like 30-40% of the population would, they thrive on keto, and then probably another 30-40% can do well on it and adapt to it. And there's probably about 10-20% that probably shouldn't be on keto.
Well, that's me. I'm one of those people. And I had my DNA done with 23andMe. I downloaded the raw data. I ran it through Xcode Life. They have a platform that pulls out all of your SNPs and looks at them and then makes a recommendation for you. Saturated fat is fine for me, but it says that I will do better on a higher carb approach, lower fat approach. And like, for example, olive oil is not really the best for me, which was a shocker.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm give you an example. I would call myself a carbivore. You know, I eat a lot of carbohydrates and, you know, I just recently got my insulin blood sugar response and I'm running at 0.4, which is, you know, that's a keto, like this is where people are trying to get on a ketogenic diet. I'm knocking back, you know, salads and nuts and eating apples and oranges, you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, which would probably throw Matt into some sort of like tailspin of some sort, you know.
Well, right after we get off this episode, I'm going to go mill some wheat and make fresh bread.
Now you're talking because my mom's a bread maker and she's undefeated in getting people to consume her bread. I know Matt's a VIP member of that group. So I'm all about homemade bread. I mean, that's a whole other food group category that's kind of untouchable.
Well, all the enzymes are right there from what I understand. When you start with the wheat in its whole form and you mill it, the enzymes are preserved and then you use it right away and it helps you digest it.
Perhaps we do have one nice question that might bring everything full circle because we started by talking about, you know, who's keto appropriate for, getting into keto, how to make it work, should you be there? And now we're talking about, you know, is it for life or is it not working? Transitioning off of a potential ketogenic diet or, you know, entering some sort of perhaps fat adapted maintenance diet, which isn't necessarily ketogenic. what would that look like? For example, we have a question from Anna, and her subject was keto transition to paleo. And she said that she was fairly new to IF, was doing 18-6, started listening to the podcast, started keto at the same time, which hit her pretty hard with low energy, feeling lethargic, but now she feels great. But despite that, after reading one of my posts on keto, she wanted to say, is it safe to say that keto would be a good vehicle for fat burning and weight loss, but that she should transition to a more paleo style diet for maintenance? She says, I had a very paleo focused diet before, but it was low in calories. Should I wait until my fasting becomes more natural? I'm looking for the healthiest way to maintain. As much as I like the keto diet, I don't think this is something I can do for life without getting insane with carb tracking. Also, I miss sweet potatoes. I would love to hear your comments. So yeah, so for listeners who maybe keto did work or didn't work or does work, you know, transitioning from keto, is that possible? Like what does that look like? Like a maintenance diet for life is keto a maintenance diet for life?
Yeah, great question. And we're back to the first key to biologically optimize your diet, which is sustainability. And I love the fact that she's clear that for her, again, for psychological reasons, that keto is not sustainable for life. And for her, it's a short-term thing. So I think that clarity is awesome. And I think in terms of if you are doing keto and you want to get off keto, you want to be smart about it. And what is smart? It's slowly bringing back carbs. You know, going from, let's say, 20, 30 grams of carbs to 300 grams of carbs, you're going to have issues, right? So, you know, again, bringing back sweet potatoes. And I think like the three diets that Wade and I support wholeheartedly is plant-based, paleo, or keto. You know, just find the one that, again, works for you based on all the things we discussed. And going from keto to paleo is a great transition because, again, you can bring back some low glycemic load carbs like sweet potato and, you know, slowly start increasing your carbs so that your weight doesn't spike up, so that your insulin doesn't get out of whack. So I love that move. I think that's what I typically recommend for people who want to get off keto is to shift over to paleo. But I think the biggest key is just slowly bring back the carbs, you know, go from 20, 30 grams to maybe 75 to 100 to 125. And there is, in terms of maintaining your weight, there's probably, again, an optimal point of carbs. I do think that, again, unless you're genetically wired like Wade is, who does really well on carbs and doesn't gain a lot of fat, that people that do well in keto, who want to get off, yeah, probably, you know, 100 grams to 150 grams tops is probably where they want to settle at and increase their protein intake and, again, keep their fat probably around 20%, give or take. So paleo is great for that. I think that's pretty much kind of the ratios you would naturally fall upon.
And question for that, if the person is on a higher fat keto, when they do decide to bring back more carbs, should they first titrate down the fat before bringing back any carbs and then slowly bring in the carbs? Or can they still slowly bring in the carbs while maintaining a higher fat approach? Just because of what we were talking about, the potential dangers of being in both a higher carb and a higher fat situation at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I think that happens naturally. Again, you might shift your proteins a little bit. You might go from a ribeye to a skirt in terms of your cuts of meat, or you might go from, you know, pork to fish. I mean, just shifting these food choices, your fat intake is going to probably cut in half and your protein intake is probably going to double. So I think just shifting your food choices a little bit and, you know, because to me, if you're on keto, you want to be eating high fat meat and high fat fish and high fat seafood versus if you're on paleo, then you'd probably start, like I said, titrating down. And that happens pretty organically. So again, yeah, I wouldn't eat as much pork. I wouldn't eat as much ribeyes as I would naturally do on keto if I personally shifted to paleo.
I think that's also great advice because right now we're in a crazy place with dietary advice. You know, if you run a large Facebook diet support group, you'll see the advice that some people throw out to anyone if you're struggling. They say, eat more fat. And I'm like, please stop giving that advice because that is not a universal you know, approach that people should give. In fact, one person took me to task for something I said on my other podcast, Intermittent Fasting Stories, where we were talking about what if we started to gain weight? What if my pants got tight? I said, well, I would just use a little less butter on my roll. And she said, you are wrong because there's no such thing as too much fat. Fat is good. And I'm like, no, where have we gotten? How have we gotten to this? It's like the pendulum has gone too far the other direction. Fat is not bad or scary, but that doesn't mean it's a free food. Nothing is.
Well, yeah, first of all, the calories matter, but even getting ripped and shredded. So Kevin Weiss, who's my coach, and Wade used to compete against them back in the competitive days. What he would do keto and he would actually drop his fat and increase his protein to get shredded. And going back to being fat adapted, like let's say you're that third phase of fat adapted, like you're really fat adapted, then when you drop your fats down, your body's not going to start converting protein into glucose as, and that's the big fear, right? Okay, my protein's too high. I'm going to start having gluconeogenesis, which is to use the protein, turn it into glucose. Now, it might happen a little bit, but your body, once it's used and comfortable and happy burning fat, it will continue burning fat even as you're titrating the fats down and increasing the proteins. So yeah, I think in the real world, people have too much fear. So as a general strategy, I think starting with a lot of fat early on in your keto journey makes a lot of sense. But again, past that 3 month, 6 month, 12 month mark, in my experience, it's not as critical. You can start dropping the fats and increasing the proteins.
But these are people that are not doing keto, just telling everyone to eat more fat. That's where the danger is coming in. It's not like everybody's keto and just eat more fat. It's people who are eating, like for me, I'm having bread, I'm having butter, I'm having pasta, I'm having whatever. The answer for me, if I wanted to lose more weight, would not be add more fat to that plate. But people were like, you're wrong, Jen. You should not eat less fat or less butter on your roll. And I'm like, well, I actually don't think that's a good weight loss strategy, add more fat, because they hear it in the keto community, but didn't try to carry it over to everyone.
Yeah, I definitely think that's an issue. One last like rapid fire question that I've been actually dying to ask the whole podcast. With something like you were mentioning coconut oil or MCT oil or something that is naturally rich in, especially with MCT oil, direct ketones that could be provided to the body, would it be possible that having too much of that for too long when trying to become keto adapted or ketogenic, that the body would never like learn how to produce its own endogenous ketones because it's constantly processing exogenous ketones? Or is that not something to be concerned about?
It's a great question, which I don't have a hard answer to. But what I can tell you, first of all, it's hard to consume too much MCT oil because it causes too much digestive distress. Like for me, you know, more than a tablespoon a day, it's just, I start having problems. So it's hard to consume a lot of it. And I think, again, early on, it makes sense. But yeah, after a couple of weeks, I'm not a fan of using ketone salts or ketone esters or too much MCT. They're tools in the toolbox, and I'll use them occasionally. And you know, one of the ways some people use it is to be dual fuel. So in other words, you know, you can be eating carbs and use ketone esters. And if you're fat adapted, like if you're actually a fat adapted person, but even if you're out of ketosis, you'll actually burn both glucose and ketones at the same time. Now that's powerful. And a couple times a year, we do this really intense brain training for a week and I'll go dual fuel. So I'll be eating a little bit of carbs and taking about 60 grams of esters a day. And it makes a big difference. But that's a really, again, once in a blue moon kind of thing. We can talk about that. Maybe we can talk about biohacking. But the point is, I agree with the theory that you want to become effective and efficient at breaking down long-chain fatty acids. In other words, the saturated fats and all these things, which if you're just consuming MCT all the time, yeah, maybe it'll slow down that adaptation. That's the very, very possible.
Gotcha. Yeah. And especially also thinking of it in the context of Jen and I know we get a lot of bulletproof coffee questions. So just throwing that out there. Well, this has been absolutely amazing. We still have so many things that we could obviously touch on, but we will just have to save those for a future episode. But thank you so much, Matt and Wade, for being here. Thank you for everything that you're doing. It's so wonderful that we could have this conversation with you guys. It sounds like despite how different we all are in our dietary approaches, I think we all are, we really have this really similar mindset surrounding diet about the uniqueness for the individual, finding what works for you, the importance of genetics, the importance of digestion, gut health, so many things. So this has been a wonderful conversation, and we definitely look forward to speaking more with you guys in the future.
Yeah. And we have a really special exclusive deal for all the listeners, which is if they go to kenergize.com, that's energize with the K, KENERGIZE.com/IF podcast. So kenergize.com/IF podcast, very exclusive offer that you won't find really anywhere else. And you can get Capex and some other really cool products at incredible prices. So check it out.
Awesome. Yes. So we will put links to all of that in the show notes, and we are super duper grateful for that. And listeners, if you do have any follow-up questions surrounding this episode, you can directly email your questions to questions@ifpodcast.com, or you can go to ifpodcast.com and you can submit questions there. And we look forward to hearing future questions, your feedback about this episode, your experiences. Hit us with it all. So this has been absolutely wonderful, and I hope everybody enjoys their weekend because it's almost the weekend.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed the whole chat.
It's been awesome.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember that everything discussed on the show is not medical advice. We're not doctors. You can also check out our other podcasts, Intermittent Fasting Stories and the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Theme music was composed by Leland Cox. See you next week.